when I started the pill, they told me it had a 10-year timestamp. And after 10 years, I should get off that pill because my risk of cancer was going to go up. And that's where the research is at. I am now getting women in my office who are like, I've been on the pill since I'm 14 and I'm 44 now. Like, is this bad? Okay, let's break this down.
This is the Entrepology Podcast, the podcast where we optimize the bodies, brains, and lifestyles of entrepreneurs, go-getters, and world-changing innovators.
Welcome to the Entrepology Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Megan Walker. As an anthropologist and naturopathic doctor, I optimize the health and performance of badass women working to change the world as entrepreneurs and go-getters. You know, people exactly like you. Before we jump into the interview, I want to invite you to join our free Facebook community, Legacy. If you want to be something amazing, you need to surround yourself with amazing people. The Legacy community is made up of badass women living, not leaving, but living our legacy every single day. We are leaders, parents, entrepreneurs, and innovators collectively committed to leaving the world better than we found it. My mission is to support the health and optimization of these badass superheroes, literally to places we never thought imaginable. If you are on a mission and get it that your health is the key to your unlimited potential, then join us. We are super awesome. You can find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/groups/BE Legacy. See you there. Well, if there's one topic that is sort of taboo as it pertains to women's health, it would be our reproductive rights. More specifically, the birth control pill. This is a topic that I have tried to pull guests into over the course of the podcast that I've released so far, and no one quite wants to touch it. Well, there is one person that I knew would be brave enough to go there. This is a woman whose area of expertise is understanding the hormonal environment of the patients she treats and the impacts of the medications, including the birth control pill, that they might be on. Dr. Jolene Brighton is a naturopathic doctor who practices on the West Coast of the United States, and she has written several books and has made a career out of understanding the influence on women's hormonal health. In today's episode, we talk about the birth control pill, the good and the bad, to give you a balanced approach. In fact, the only approach that women deserve to have, which is an informed one. We get into the topic of the post-birth control syndrome, some of the symptoms you should be watching for if you are in fact on the pill, and some natural alternatives if you decide that this is not the approach to birth control that you want to take. I fundamentally believe that when we know better, we do better, but sometimes it's important just to have access to the knowledge. Today, we break it down. Today, we went deep. And if you are a woman anywhere concerned about reproductive health, this episode has been designed for you. Dr. Jolene Brighton, welcome to the Entrepology Podcast.
Hi there. Thank you so much for having me.
I'm like quivering in my seat with so many questions that I have to have to ask you. But let's set the stage. Let's give people some background. You are a passionate advocate for women's health, a naturopathic doctor, functional medicine provider, and a wee bit of a badass yourself. How did Dr. Jolene Brighton get to this place in her life and career?
You know, I got to say, you know, I love this question because so often when people see you for the first time online or speaking, they think that's the moment you arrived. They think, you know, there was nothing before this. It was just all about this moment. And then you get asked the question.
Overnight success.
Yeah, right? And then my favorite question is, what's the one thing you did? And I'm like, hustle. The one thing I did was hustle. So, you know, my journey actually started, I was a super nerdy kid, the kind of kid that was reading, you know, Grey's Anatomy and every health book I could get my hands on, what to expect when you are expecting. That was one of my first books, like when I got my period, of like, what is actually happening in my body? I am not a fan of that book, by the way. I feel like I got misinformed in a lot of ways with that book, and it's not as empowering as it could have been. But so, you know, that's a bit about who I was. So it's kind of like in my DNA, this like super nerd, and also just someone who is tenacious about the whys in life. And so, you know, in my journey, I ended up going to nutrition school, went and got my undergrad in nutrition science. I was a group fitness instructor at the time. And my career was progressing towards getting my PhD at UC Davis. I actually had a full ride to go there. And, and not a lot of people know that I was working in recombinant DNA technology. We're talking like super nerdy stuff, like getting into the weeds of what can we do with our DNA. And I found naturopathy. And I actually brushed it off at first because I was like, that sounds too good to be true. That can't be a real thing. It was someone who then again said, you know, you'd be an amazing naturopathic doctor. And at that time, I was studying science, but I was also a yoga instructor and I was running my own yoga and nutrition practice. I've been an entrepreneur since I was a child. Like, I think my very first job was when I went and climbed trees and harvested mistletoe and then divvied it up and tied ribbons on it and took it in a wagon around the neighborhood and sold it. So I've always been an entrepreneur, really. So I was running my own business, doing that, and it just clicked. And what really stood out to me is that here I was studying science, I was, you know, doing all this research, but there was this kind of glazing over or lack of respect for the natural world and just the way that nature designed things. It was almost like we could do it better. And that just always rubbed me a little bit wrong, because as this really curious child, you know, I didn't want to overcome and override nature. Like, I wanted to understand it deeper. And I also didn't like that my research was basically going to be funding like Food Council and not necessarily be doing what I would have liked it to do. And so I became a naturopathic doctor. And I that's something that I'm like, that could be a whole story in itself. But I went to naturopathic school. And, for people who are listening, especially if they're students, people will say to me, your blog is so great. And they think that I just started a year or two ago. And what they don't understand is that I set up real estate on Google my second year of naturopathic school. And it was then that I was like, hey, there's something to this internet thing and this writing online. And I don't know what it is, but I'm going to do it,
right?
Because I think this is where the future is going. and so that's when I started my blog. And so I explained to people, like, understand that I have so much organic reach and I have so much traffic because it's much like buying property in California. If you get in early, you actually get rewarded over time. There's equity to be built on the internet. excuse me. I'm getting over a bit of a cold, so I apologize for...
It's okay. Real life happens.
It does. It does indeed. So that's, you know, the very first thing I want to say is that when I left school, I thought, okay, I'm going to have to get a job. I'm going to have to work for someone else. I did that for like a hot minute. Because the truth is that if you're truly, yeah, right? If you're truly an entrepreneur, if it's truly in your DNA, you don't do well working for other people because you're always looking at how can you do it better? How can you push the envelope? Like what are the ways that we can change and evolve? And, you know, I'm an employer now. I actually like it when my employees bring that to the table. But at the same time, it's that if that's the way, if you're always wanting to do it better and you've got that really go-getter attitude, you're probably an entrepreneur. And so, you know, I ended up opening up my own practice in Oakland, California. And that journey, you know, it ended in now I own multiple practices. I have two residents in my clinic. And I say the journey ended. It's just beginning, actually.
It just begins, right?
there is no end to this, really. No. So, so that's, you know, that's a bit about my journey. That's kind of like the brief overview of it all. Because I know that you've got a ton of questions for me. And so I didn't want to spend too much time in any one place, knowing that you'll flesh out those details that your listeners really want to hear.
Yeah, well, we're totally going to flesh those out. And part of that evolution in your career is that you have also worked as an author and are working as an author. Can you take us through some of the books that you've written or are working on, and some of the topics that are really close to your heart?
Yeah. So in my here's a little fact that no one knows about me, actually, is that my first book, it's Healing Your Body Naturally After Childbirth. It's The New Mom's Guide to Navigating the Fourth Trimester. I wrote that book for two reasons. One, when I was a mom, it was seriously lacking. I was like, where's the postpartum information? Like, childbirth is so quick, and yet we spend so much attention there, and quick in terms of the fact that, like, you are going to be healing 3 months after a baby. Like, that's non-negotiable. Like, that's a minimum that you're going to be healing there. But the other reason is, in my practice, I found myself saying the same things over and over. And so rather than, and you know, I played with the idea of an online program, but you know what's really nice is having this little mini book. I designed it so it wouldn't be too big if it's in a diaper bag. And so that you can just pull it out while you're breastfeeding, manage it, hold it, get the answers you need really quickly. And so, you know, that was something I saw a need in the market. That was my first book. Now, here's the thing that most people don't know. I actually wrote an entire other book in that year. So I wrote two books in 1 year. That book is yet to be published. And it's a lot about my work in the clinic with postpartum women who develop autoimmune disease. So I don't know when I'll publish that. And if anyone listening has ever published a book, they know why I'm saying, I don't know when that's going to get published.
Right.
You know, books, man, they are like birthing children. There's a gestation period, but I think it's a lot harder than growing a human in some ways. So currently I'm working on another book. I'm focused on women's reproductive rights. This is something that I just really can't stand another moment of us not being able to talk about this and talk about the fact that, you know, as in women's health, we're given very few options. As women, you know, if you go into your doctor and you say, I have this complaint and fill in the blank, whatever you're concerned about, fill in the blank. And odds are you're going to be offered the birth control pill, maybe a hysterectomy, IVF, and then some mood altering prescription drugs. Like that's really the
option.
That's
empowering.
Yeah. Right. And so, you know, and this is something that like, you know, it's come from patients really coming to me and women reflecting that to me. I don't like going to my doctor, my conventional doctor, because this is all the options that I get. And he tells me this is the way life is and I'm never going to heal, which, you know, my personality type is like, say can't to me one more time and I will show you how it's possible. Like, I love that. And I love when patients are, you know, they're kind of what conventional medicine would call troublemakers. I just call them awesome. And that's when they ask a million questions and they get really invested in themselves and they challenge everything they've ever been told. I love that. And so that's what I'm currently working on. I think it's important, you know, you've got entrepreneurs on this podcast. My first book was a self-published. My second book, I went to publishers. I'm working with a really big house now. And, you know, people always ask, why'd you do that differently? My first book was a resource and a tool, and I didn't want to wait 2 years for a publisher to put that out there. I wanted to get it out to my people as soon as possible. And so that was the reason I went that route. With this book, I really want to be able to reach as many women as possible. And that's something that a publisher can help you do. I also want to make the best book I can. I want it to be, you know, sometimes people will say, oh, your first book, like I found a typo or this, that. Nice thing about self-publishing, you can go in and correct it. But it's something where it's like, yeah, I'm actually a doctor. I'm not a, you know, editor or a publisher. And so, so I need that help. And so that's the other reason too. I just preemptively answered that one because it's always a question I get is like, why did you do one differently than the other?
Well, it's interesting because so many entrepreneurs that I work with and clinicians that I work with, they're after the book deal and they're after the media exposure. And I always ask them, well, why do you want that? And they're like, well, it was just, well, they don't even know. They don't even know why they want it, right? And
yeah.
And if you are strategic, you understand the purpose of all of these tools and where they roll. And in working with a lot of clinicians, a lot of them say, I mean, listen, I have had publishers and I've self-published. And frankly, where I actually make money off a book is when I self-publish it.
Absolutely.
And where you don't make money off a book is when you work with a publishing house. But usually those entrepreneurial individuals have a whole other funnel and a whole other plan and a whole other strategy behind how that book is going to work. So it's such a really great point.
Yeah. And when, you know, when you're taking on women's reproductive rights in this day and age, I mean, the conversation is hot right now. It is nice to have like that you to have a publishing house that has your back in that
yeah.
as well and is supporting you. And so that's, I mean, you're absolutely right. And I think it's really important that people do understand that because people will, they'll chase the book and they'll chase the fame. And I've got to confess, I actually have a really hard time being on camera and I don't get fueled by the fame. I don't get fueled by when people are like, oh, wow, like you're the most popular kid in school. I was never the popular kid in school. So it just doesn't do it for me. But when someone writes in a letter to me, I had this beautiful email the other day. This woman said, I have done every single thing that applied to me on your blog and I am 100% better. I have completely turned my life around just by following your work over the last year and implementing everything that you put out there. That is what does it for me. When I get a message like that, I'm like, that is why I do the work that I do. So I think it's important to identify what fuels you because it's important. And if it's fame, no shame in that. If fame fuels you, fantastic. If you're putting out a good message in the world and that keeps you going, tap into that and find it. But also, it's really important for people to understand, because I'll have people say to me, oh, you just wrote a book so that you could make a lot of money. And I'm like, well, if that's the reason you're writing a book, you're gonna burn out really quick.
There's better ways to make money.
There are definitely better ways to make money. And it's also, you know, it's just something that I'm like, if that's all that's fueling you, that won't keep you going for very long. So you've got to tap into, like, what does it for you? What gets you out of bed in the morning and gets you excited? Like, you know, for me, I have to hold those women in my mind when I step in front of a camera, I step on stage to speak, because I'm like, I don't really love this. This isn't like my jam right now. But what happens afterwards and the lives I touch, that is what does it for me.
So let's go there. Let's talk about this concept of reproductive rights as women, because I think that as it pertains to birth control in particular, we've had this conversation our whole life that the birth control pill was one of the most revolutionary interventions that women gained access to, and was this pivotal accelerator of our independence, of our capacity to engage in the world and participate in the world in a contributing manner beyond just working within the home. We saw a real shift in terms of the role that women could engage in around the time that the birth control pill was introduced. Is this the biggest earth-shattering thing that's ever happened to women's rights in the last century?
So we cannot deny the birth control pill has been instrumental in how women have been able to progress in society overall. And so people are always kind of shocked because, you know, I speak about the birth control pill. I got the reputation of being the doctor who speaks about the things we're not supposed to speak about a long time ago. Oh, and I don't care. And I grew up in this super conservative household where I was shamed and I couldn't even talk about my period. And that's something that now that I'm an adult, I'm like, that is the most difficult thing for a woman to have to struggle with, is that she has these issues, she has these concerns, she has these gaps in knowledge, and she's not allowed to talk about it. And it's a double-edged sword with the pill, because you can't talk bad about it and you can't talk good about it. Like, you're not like you can get kind of you know, just basically shamed either way or criticized either way. But, you know, as much as I will say, you know, I will speak out against the things that the pill does that's negative, you know, I'm all about meeting women where they're at and supporting them. So I'm going to say, first thing, I am a first generation college student. I did the pill for a decade. And I can tell you, you know, I don't know that I would have done things different. Even when I look back, I would love to be like, now that I know better, I would do better and I would do different. But at the same time, if I had not been on that pill, I may have ended up pregnant. I'm the first woman in my family not to get pregnant before age 19. Like, my family is a very fertile bunch. Like, this is kind of what they do. They just like wrote me off. By the time I got to 30, they were like, nah, she must be infertile. There's something wrong with her. So, you know, I just like to acknowledge that, like, you know, I think it's really easy. I could easily say, oh yeah, now that I know that it's messing up your adrenals and messing up your gut, and I have autoimmune disease and that may have played a role in it, I wouldn't have done it. I'm like, well, look where I am. Like, this was part of my journey. And a lot of women can say that as well. I mean, we know that, you know, one study found that the pill was responsible for a 10% increase in wages beginning in the 1960s. Pill was introduced. Employers got wind that they didn't have to worry about a woman getting pregnant and taking maternity leave. And we saw wages go up and women's positions have been growing in companies. We also know that, you know, that the estimates have, they now say that by the 1990s, they can trace a 30% increase in our wages back to the pill, and that we've been graduating college at higher rates ever since the pill was introduced. So that's just to say, we can't totally hate on it. It has been instrumental in women's positions in society. And, you know, I think you and I, you know, can both acknowledge that we've got a lot of sisters out there who are now, you know, CEOs of companies that never happened before.
100%.
Part of that is because we could control our reproduction. And so, you know, it's an amazing thing. I mean, I am a naturopathic doctor and I do believe in like respecting your body, but at the same time, I am a scientist at my core. And it is something that's amazing that they actually designed something that could control your fertility. Now, the problem is that, you know, there's a very dark history to the pill that a lot of people do not know about. And, you know, if women are looking, or men as well, I think everybody getting on this, if you're wanting to go deep into like, what is that dark history with the pill? There's a book that I love, by a good friend of mine, Holly Griggs Ball. It's called Sweetening the Pill. And she actually goes into, you know, some of that dark history, like how birth control pill was actually being developed by Nazis and being tested, you know, way back when. You know, we know that when the pill was going through its trials in Puerto Rico, there were women who died, and that was kind of brushed under the rug. There's a very dark history to this pill. It wasn't all about women's reproductive rights. But I'll tell you, you know, something that's really interesting is that if you stand back and you look at it in the lens of, as we're talking about being a business person, an entrepreneur, if you could design a pharmaceutical that didn't require a medical diagnosis and could be taken every day for, you know, now doctors say for the rest of your life, like that's a really, really good product that you've got there.
And yeah, so, yeah, it's true. There's a lot of pressure to make that work.
Yeah, totally. And that's not to say, you know, people love to say like, oh, these evil pharmaceutical companies, you know, like there's some things that I think there's something, you know, to be said to that in some capacity, but at the same time, like, There are some good things that they do. And so my personality type, my Myers-Briggs is the devil's advocate. So I have a hard time being an all or nothing kind of person. I'm always like, we've got to weigh everything, and it's kind of the yin and yang in everything. We've got to weigh it all and see it for what it really is. But, you know, to answer your question, that was my very long-winded way. Yeah, the pill was definitely very instrumental in, you know, the women's movement and our, you know, our capacity to show up in the workplace and in college in different ways. But at the same time, you know, we need to stand back, and we also have to ask at what cost was this to some women? Not all women have issues with the pill, but some of them do.
So let's talk about what some of those issues are, because here's what I hear in practice. So I know you're hearing the same thing too, is I have women who come in and they're like, I think I'm crazy on the birth control pill. And I brought that up with my primary care physician and they said, that's all in my head. And I've heard this once. I hear this every single day that I am in clinic. So can we just start there? I mean, we fully acknowledge that this has played some really pivotal roles, but I think we have this tendency when we talk about good things in our society that we are caught in this either or, and it's nice just to sometimes talk about the truth. So yes, it serves some important roles and we're not against it, but let's talk about this symptom that I have so many people talking about in practice, and this is that they feel crazy on birth control pill. Is this a myth or do you see it too?
No, it's not a myth. And let me just say this right now. If you're a doctor and you're listening to this and you even utter those words to a woman that this is just all in your head, you need to go check yourself, because that is the most disempowering thing that you can do to a patient. And I don't believe that doctors are out there trying to disempower their patients. Just sometimes they get, you know, if you've got 7 minutes with a woman, you can definitely go into what I call robot mode, and you just have your little spiel that you give and you move along your way. So here's the thing. It is not in your head, not whatsoever. You know, depression has been something that women have complained about since the introduction of the pill. This is nothing new that women have complained about. And the thing that I find really disheartening is how, although there are hundreds of thousands of women who will say, and I'm one of them, I was on one pill and I couldn't get out of the shower for like a week. I'm not even kidding. Like in the shower, crying, just like a poor 19-year-old me. I look back and I'm like, what was wrong with me? Now, my doctor at the time was like, I think you have a mental health issue. You need to go to counseling, but also let's try switching your birth control pill. And we switched my birth control pill and things got better. So, you know, when that's an N of one, but this happens all the time, or women get off the pill. What I find really disheartening is there was that JAMA study that came out with, you know, 1 million women. It was the biggest study that we'd ever had on depression. And even after that study came out and showed the correlation between the birth control pill and new onset of depression, there were so many people dismissing it. What really got me is how many men were in the media saying, no, I'm going to criticize this study for this reason, and this can't be possible. And it's like, okay, so one, you've never popped that pill. Two, like, you're not listening to your patients, because you shouldn't need a study to believe your patient. Like, you shouldn't need a study to believe what hundreds of thousands of women are saying. And so there is absolutely correlation. And the interesting thing about that study is they were only measuring women who went and filled prescriptions, or you were so depressed you ended up in a hospital. We're talking about the pill hit you so hard you ended up hospitalized. That was me crying in a shower. Like, imagine, like, just 1 week of my life, like, was gone because I was taking that pill and I couldn't figure out what was wrong with me and why suddenly someone who had so much ambition, was such a go-getter, like, just really, you know, had a passion for life, everything changed, you know, in a matter of days for me. So this is something that, you know, I really take issue with doctors telling women these things are in their head. It's not in your head. And, you know, a big part of this is, so let's just stand back and let's just like for 1 minute, recognize that most doctors have no problem diagnosing PMS and PMDD, which I don't diagnose PMDD because that's a psychological diagnosis. And I believe in root cause and not stigmatizing a woman with something with a diagnosis like that. But there are doctors, they will diagnose these things and they will absolutely recognize that your hormones play a role in your mood. They will also recognize that your hormones play such a role in your mood that they'll put you on the pill to try to override your hormones, to mask what's going on, to try to correct your mood. So if that's the logic they're using in one capacity, how can they turn around and say that that birth control pill cannot alter your mood in any way? No, you can't. It's just a complete fallacy. And so if we know that the natural hormones can be altering your mood, and like, why can it be, you know, why would we dismiss that this giant bolus of estrogen that you take orally, PS, that's not where estrogen comes from. It mostly comes from your ovaries, a little bit from your adrenal glands. The microbiome may be playing a role in making estrogen as well, but that's not the primary source of estrogen. We know that estrogen is highly inflammatory. What holds weight better than any theory out there for depression, really, if you look at the science? The cytokine theory of depression, which says that inflammation disrupts your serotonin pathways. Inflammation on the brain actually leads to these mood disorders. Guess what the pill is? It's highly, highly inflammatory. So if you stand back, like, take, you know, whatever, whether we have research or not, just think through it logically. Just think through the basic physiology of how all of this works. And it makes absolute sense. The question we need to be asking, we do not need to be asking, does the pill cause depression, in my opinion? We know that. Done. Over. We know that. What we need to be asking is, who is susceptible? Because right. It doesn't happen to every woman. So that's what I want to know, is who is actually susceptible to this? Because then I can do better as a doctor. Then when I'm talking to a woman about that pill and whether or not she wants to stay on it, we can have an even better understanding of how that affects the individual. Because at the end of the day, that's all I really care about. We've got this generalization. So people who are listening, if you don't know how a research study works, you take a population of people, you basically cherry pick them. You say, I only want these people to fit in the study. Then you put them through a bottleneck in that study so that you get, so this is me as the research scientist, this is what we did. Then you get exactly what you want so that it fits the narrative, so that you get this statistically significant outcome, so that you can continue to get funding. When you look at what's being done in research, you understand that whatever that study says is not going to apply to every single person. In fact, the pharmaceutical companies know this. And what they say is a real trial begins once the drug goes out into the market over the next 10 years. That's when we watch it. And so to me, I want to understand, how does this affect the individual that sits in front of me, not that cherry-picked bottleneck population that was distilled down to get a statistically significant outcome. And like, I'm not bashing the science. That's the way things are being done right now. But I want people to understand that just because a study says something and says that whatever you're experiencing can't be true, understand it may be true of you. And that's what we need to be asking, is it true for you?
So recognizing, it's such a great point. So recognizing that we all carry different risk factors. We have some people who will come into our offices and you ask them about the pill. They're like, yeah, I've been on the pill since I was 14 years old.
Oh, yeah.
They're like, is that bad? Is it?
It ain't good. So let me...
Okay.
So, you know, it's I am of the age that I'll say back in the day when I started the pill, they told me it had a 10-year timestamp. And after 10 years, I should get off that pill because my risk of cancer was going to go up. And that's where the research is at. I am now getting women in my office who are like, I've been on the pill since I'm 14 and I'm 44 now. Like, is this bad? Okay, let's break this down. So there's a lot of things. Like, I could actually spend probably a good 3 hours talking to you about everything that the pill does. But here's a big takeaway. One, it's depleting your nutrients. So that alone, you can't out-diet. You cannot out-diet the pill. And what do I mean by that is, if the pill's depleting folate, you're going to need to be eating like 10 servings of leafy green vegetables every day. And I'm not even sure you're going to be able to replete that. So you definitely need to be on a multivitamin. This is another reason why it's like, well, yeah, of course it's causing mood symptoms. It's depleting B vitamins. It's depleting your collateral minerals, what help you run your neurotransmitter pathways. So it's depleting a lot of nutrients. And what's definitely a concern about that is that most women don't know this, so definitely, ladies, write this one down. By the time you know you're pregnant, when that little stick says positive, you already needed that folate. You already needed that folate weeks ago. And so that's something to understand, is that if you're on the pill, it's messing with your nutrients. You need to be on a multivitamin or a prenatal at least. The other thing to know about the pill is that the longer you stay on it, the higher the risk factors are for cancer, for instance, also for developing autoimmune disease. And we know who gets autoimmune disease, but us ladies. So that's another thing to understand. But, you know, a really big one is you've been shutting down the way your brain has been talking to your ovaries for however long you've been on that pill. And there's something called the ovary adrenal thyroid axis. None of your hormones act alone. It's very silly to me. So understand that scientists, they love to think like one thing, because if I can just give you estrogen and test that, it's so much cleaner. It's so much cleaner. But that is not how it works. And so
it's not how anything works. So it's so naive to think the body works that way.
Totally.
It's really crazy.
But you know, it's that simplicity that we can study it. It's a little cleaner to study and research. And this is also why they don't really like to do research with women as much, because we're so complicated, is what they say. Yeah, we are, because we create life. Like, we're pretty badass in that way. Like, we grow humans in our body. So yeah, we better be complicated. So, with the pill, for as long as you're on it, it's disrupting your hormones. And if it's disrupting the way your brain's talking to your ovaries, it's certainly disrupting your other hormones as well. And it can start affecting your thyroid. You know, once we get to age 35, you know, our risk of having thyroid disease goes way up. It messes with your adrenal glands. I mean, who needs that? And this, I mean, modern society, everything's messing with our adrenal glands, you know, and it's messing with your microbiome, which, as you know, going back to the depression piece, what do we know about the microbiome? I mean, the last 5 years has just exploded, where they're like, wow, your microbiome plays a really big role on your mood. Well, what plays a really big role in causing leaky gut and disrupting that microbiome? But the birth control pill. And so, you know, there's a lot of ways I work with women in my office. Like, I get it. Like, it. So here's my thing. As a doctor, it is not my right. It's not my place to tell you what to do with your body. You need to stay on the pill. That's all you need to tell me. I got to stay on the pill. I'm not at a place to come off of it right now. Okay, I got your back in that. I'm going to support you with where you're at. I'm going to run appropriate lab testing so that I can get as dialed in as possible. If I see something in that lab testing, like, you know, that you're at really high risk for a blood clot, then we got to have real talks about that. Like, this is not the best thing. And P.S., we're going over to the cardiologist right away. But, you know, if it's something where, you know, that pill is just not working for you, I'm going to be really real about it, but I'm happy to support a woman with where she's at. You know, I think that if somebody had told me in my 20s when I was in medical school, get off the pill right now, I'd be like, you're crazy. I can't do that. I can't risk getting pregnant. I can't deal with the anxiety of that altogether. So, you know, it's just something that if you've been on the pill for a really long time, understand that, you know, there's consequences to that. These are the things that I wish my doctor had talked to me about. And that's why I'm talking about them. Because, you know, even though there's these risks and there's these consequences, there are definitely things that you can do to mitigate that risk. But I'll tell you, a lot of women are fearful to come off the pill, because even though, you know, majority of medical doctors will tell you, oh yeah, you come off the pill, you just have your fertility comes right back, and you know, you're just skipping tra-la-la off into the happily ever after. That is not the truth for the majority of women. The majority of women there is like a wrath that comes when your body for the, and it's not like your body rebelling. There's a lot of people that, you know, will say like, oh, I feel like my body's just like, you know, against me. No, think about it. If you've had something to say for a decade or more, and for the first time someone like ripped the duct tape off your mouth and you finally can say it, you're probably going to scream it. You're going to be like, oh my gosh, I can finally say this thing. And that's really what your body's doing, is it's saying, hey, there's some big stuff going on and I really, really, really need you to pay attention, because all I want to do is survive. I know you want that too, so I'm going to be as loud as possible. And so that's how I really view post-birth control syndrome, that, you know, the constellation of symptoms that arise after coming off the pill. It's not your body rebelling. It's your body's opportunity to say, I love you very much and I'm going to give you the tough talks that, like, we've got to move quick because all I want is for you to survive.
Well, then this is such an amazing conversation when the place we started was, let's talk about women's reproductive rights, because we're not, and you're not saying, you've got to come off the pill. What we're saying is, let's do the pill. Let's do your unique version of health even better.
Yeah.
So if we have women who are like, listen, I get all of this and exactly what you alluded to before, I'm just not in a place where I'm ready to come off the pill. Are there some absolute key things that they need to make sure that they are addressing? We talked about nutrient depletion and folate. Is there anything else that they need to be aware of? Is there a seed we need to plant in terms of, if this starts to happen, you need to go back and have a conversation with your physician again around your prescription?
Yeah, well, of course, there's the big scaries that always get kind of dismissed, but, you know, and that's clots, blood clots, cancer. You know, those are the big scaries, and those risks are real. And although, you know, they've been iterating on the pill and trying to make that better, you know, so those are like the big things that we like par cue in our office, right? We say, you know, you want to look out for clots. So, you know, what does that look like? Shortness of breath, chest pain, changes in vision, headaches. If you're having swelling in your feet, those kinds of things that your doctor should have definitely talked to you about. If you start having irregular bleeding while you're on the pill, so if you're, you know, doing the withdrawal, so ladies, understand that's not a real period. That's just a withdrawal from a hormone. If you're doing the withdrawal and you have a period and then you're having really, you know, I'm having lots of spotting, or your cramps are getting worse, or you're having a heaviness in your pelvis, or your bowels are changing, definitely go to your doctor. Definitely get that checked out right away. Because that, you know, that can be that, you know, and nobody likes to hear the C word, but that can be a sign of cancer. And so we always want to be looking out for those things. And I say, you know, when I tell women, if there's ever a moment where you feel like something's not right, where you say, this is not normal for me, that's worth going to your doctor for, because you live in your body every day. You're the only one that can gauge what's normal and what's not normal. And then the other thing, you know, is, so we've got the mood symptoms that can start to come up. We definitely want to be supplementing with a multivitamin or prenatal. The reason why I say or prenatal is, you know, prenatals actually tend to have a little more folate in them, a little more minerals as well. And that tends to go over, I see in my practice, a lot better in terms of really meeting those nutrient needs. Your doctor needs to be measuring labs on you. So definitely, you know, at least annually having labs, looking at your cholesterol. That might seem like something kind of silly, but the pill is silly in the sense of like, why are we looking at cholesterol when we're talking about hormones? But you're taking, guess who has to process all that estrogen but your liver? That's why like getting like tumors and growth on your liver is a real thing with the pill. And so, you know, looking at your cholesterol, looking at markers of your liver health is really important as well. And so, you know, for women in my practice that want to stay on the pill, we definitely have, we have lots of lifestyle and diet therapies. Like, don't get me wrong, those are absolutely foundational. And I said you can't out-diet the pill, but you also can't out-supplement a poor diet and lifestyle. So don't think that, like, you know, and like, I don't want this to sound judgmental, but like, if you're not eating vegetables, you can't just take a multivitamin. It doesn't work out that way, because food is so much more than just the nutrients. And I really dislike reductionistic thinking where we're like, oh, we just eat leafy greens to get folate. No, there's a lot of things. There's a lot of nutrients going on. There's also fiber and phytonutrients. And, you know, there's the fact that food is information. It's not just calories in, calories out. It's not just nutrients in, but it's information. And you're signaling to your body how safe and wonderful the environment is. So you want to make your body stay safe and you're feel safe and you're on the pill. Regular meals, control the blood sugar, nice, you know, nice servings of vegetables on your plate. If you can get 3 three meals a day with ample vegetables and high quality protein going on as well. If you're eating inflammatory foods, inflammatory proteins, and you're taking an inflammatory pharmaceutical, you're going to find yourself in big trouble. So definitely, you know, another thing that I would say is that if everybody's listening to this and being like, whoa, this is a lot of diet stuff to have to be doing, first things first, start kicking up your vegetables and start cooking with things like ginger and turmeric, getting anti-inflammatory components into your food. That's definitely another thing that we do. And then understand that if you're eating in that way and you're getting like fermented foods as well, you're going to be loving up that microbiome. And that's really important as well, is that you keep supporting your gut. Yes, is it, you know, what I say is that, okay, look, if you're taking the pill, you're basically going to be walking up a downward moving escalator, trying to get to the top where your health is. You're going to have to keep taking steps every day towards that. Cause if you don't, you're going to end up at the bottom. And that might feel ominous, but I want you to be empowered to know that you can take those steps. You can keep moving towards that health. But understand that you are taking something every day that's just, you know, it's going to be one more tick down that staircase. But you certainly can maintain. And even, you know, there are women who come to me and they've got things like SIBO going on, and they've, you know, they've got mood symptoms, they've got lots of symptoms going on, but they're not ready to come off the pill. And what I see is that we can work on all this stuff. We can get you about 80% better. I think 80% is about as far as we can go once we take that. But what's crazy to me is I'll be like, okay, we're about 80% better. Once that pill falls away, I think, oh, we're going to get to 100%. I see women that hit like 120, 140. I'm like, whoa, I didn't even know that was possible. Exactly. I didn't even think that you could be there. So we do see big changes once that pill is eliminated.
And so do we have a natural version of the pill? Do we have something that even comes close as a tool to be able to monitor our own reproductive status?
Yeah. So, you know, I don't know, how were you taught about fertility method in school? Like what were you told about fertility method? I always like to ask people.
I mean, we talked about charting. We talked about monitoring cervical fluid, like all of, you know, we can incorporate some temperature, we can incorporate some cervical fluid, we can throw all of these parameters together, maybe throw them in an app, and now we've got maybe a bit of an algorithm that suggests what's going on.
Yeah, so what I was taught in school, we were taught about the fertility method, but I was taught, never recommend this because it has a high failure rate. And so as I alluded to my personality in the beginning, yeah, just challenge me with those kinds of things and I will dive into the research and find out why and if that's true. And what I found, so, you know, in terms of contraception, you know, we've got the hormones. So, you know, we've got the pill, we've got a Mirena IUD. There's also the Skyla IUD. You know, there's actually several hormonal IUDs. Women do get mood symptoms with that as well. And that's a whole nother discussion. And then there's, you know, the non-hormonal, which is, you know, the copper IUD. That's one option. You know, women, there are women who have reported that copper toxicity. I certainly have tested and seen elevated blood copper levels. But when you look in the research, it seems to be that all they found is that, yeah, increased copper is concentrated in the uterus. But You cannot introduce something like copper and not expect, again, just like you can't introduce estrogen and not expect to disrupt other things as well. There are some women, again, you know, this is all about what's true for you. They do fantastic with the copper IUD and they love it. But, you know, when we're talking about like, if you want to go really natural and have no hormones, no devices, you know, fertility awareness method is really where it's at. And when you dive into the research, so here's the thing that I found shocking that nobody taught me in sex ed. And before I am done on this earth, this go round, women are definitely going to be better educated than I was taught in my time. And that is, there's only about max 6 days out of the month you can get pregnant. And if you know that, and you know that you can dial that in and that you can use something like the barrier method, you know, you can get, it's pretty good with pregnancy prevention. We see that, you know, in Scandinavia, they're approving fertility awareness devices for contraception. It's the first time we've ever seen that in history. Now, this, I think, is revolutionary. I mean, yes, the pill, it did some awesome things, but this this is really cool. So I use something called the DAISY Fertility Monitor, and I love this because it's super, super simple. You just take your temperature. It takes me less than 30 seconds every morning. And green light, go. Red light, no. Yellow light, you better be cautious. How simple is that? Like, you don't have to chart this. You don't have to do any of that. But if we look at the science of this, we know, so you, when you're using fertility awareness correctly, and you know, with something like these technology devices that we have now, which I just love, and I just want to say as an aside, they're comparing your cycle to hundreds of thousands of other women who are in their database, so it gets it dialed in even quicker. But we're looking at 99.3% effective. So that's with perfect use. And when we talk about birth control, we talk about perfect use and typical use. And when we look at the perfect use of fertility awareness method, and you know, in this instance, I'm using the DAISY, but fertility awareness method with perfect use, it beats out the birth control pill with typical use. The typical use of birth control pill is only about 96% effective. And so here's something that critics will always say, oh yeah, but you know, women who are using fertility awareness, like if you they're using this method, using FAM is what it's called. You know, they're too dumb to be able to do this. I really scoff at that one. Women are very, very intelligent, in my opinion. The other thing they'll say is like, women just can't control themselves. I'm like, come on, like do you not see what we've done in like the span of womanhood? And so. They'll criticize it, but I'll tell you this, this is what I see. If you don't have something like this promise of a pharmaceutical, just, you know, sitting there telling you everything's going to be okay, just pop this pill and go along your way, you are a lot more diligent about your fertility. And so that's why I think it, you know, it's 99%, over 99% effective, is because if you're not having something like a pill or an IUD, which PS, women get pregnant on both of those things, you don't have that to just kind of basically become, I think what those do is they make you the backseat driver. And so you're just like, I don't have to be in control here. If you have to take control of that will, you are much more diligent about it. And that's why I think women are really successful with the fertility awareness method. Not to mention, as a doctor and a scientist, like I'm all about data. I love the data where women can get it so dialed in to where they're like, I know my temperature. I know when it's spiking. I know when I'm fertile. I know all of these things. We're getting their window of fertility. I mean, that's fantastic information to have. And it really empowers a woman to know about her body. So even if I have women on like a copper IUD, I still encourage them to practice fertility awareness method because it's an opportunity to get to know your body better than anyone else can know your body, better than a lab test can tell us about your body. And when you have that knowledge, it makes it so much easier to navigate your health and to understand when your health gets off kilter as well.
Yeah, such great points. Dr. Brighton, how would you define health?
Oh, that's a great question. So there's a Sanskrit word. It's called bhuti. And it's the moment where you feel in alignment with yourself. And what I would define health is when you feel 100% like you are resonating in the being you were meant to be on this planet, on this earth. And that's something I feel like so often we focus on. Health means I have lots of energy. Health means, you know, all of these different things. But health is really when you wake up in your body and you feel 100% whole and complete on every level of your being, you are showing up in the way that you really feel you are meant to on this earth.
Each month, I'm featuring a new Anthropology quiz to help you unlock and uncover some of the physical performance blocks that may be holding you back from your true potential. When you know better, you can do better. To learn more or to take the quiz, head on over to meganwalker.com/anthropology quiz.
What a great way to transition to our last few questions in the interview. And I call these KPIs. So just like we have them in our business, key performance indicators, I think we have them in our life and how we live our life as well. So these are just 6 really rapid fire questions for you to get a sense of your congruence and what you're doing behind the scenes. And I promise you none of them are going to be too revealing. You ready?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you have a consistent morning routine? And if so, can you share it?
Yes. So I would love to say meditation, but I'm not always so consistent with that. What I am consistent with is that I decide my day. I pick a song for the day so that when I get stressed out later in the day, I actually start playing that song in my head. But I pick the song for the day and I decide to set my intention. So I set my intention, I pick the song, and I do not check my email until I've decided what the day is going to look like.
I like that. Fiction or nonfiction, what are you reading right now?
Oh, I'm writing a book right now. So I'm reading a lot of nonfiction, and I'm a really big nerd. So I definitely do a lot more nonfiction.
What is the one thing you are most consistent with respect to your health?
Oh, I would definitely say, there's a lot of things that I'm actually really consistent with, but sleep is a huge one. I'm really consistent with sleep and making sure. And so for entrepreneurs out there, yes, sometimes there are days where I'm like, I only got 5 to 6 hours of sleep, but I make sure that I schedule in nap time and to make up for it so that I'm always getting like the rest that I feel like I need.
What is something totally badass about you that people would not otherwise know?
Oh, gosh.
I know. This is my new favorite question.
Yeah. I'm like, what would people not otherwise? Oh my gosh. I feel like I'm totally at a blank. I mean, cause you know, I feel like I revealed a few things like in terms of like, you know, I used to be a research scientist, but I'm like, what's totally badass about me? You know, I'm a really, you know, people would know this and I don't want to be braggy, but I'm actually a really good dancer. So unless you're on the dance floor with me, most people don't know that. I actually grew up a dancer. and I never ever talk about that. So,
That's a great one. That's a great one. I love it. What do you do for fun or play?
Oh, dance parties in my house for sure.
Of course.
Play is the number one prescription I write in my practice.
Yeah, me too. Totally get that. Last question for you. And I feel like I know where you're going to go, but I'll let you work it. Entrepreneurism. Are we born this way or do we learn to become entrepreneurs?
No, I believe we're 100% born this way. I 100% believe we're born this way. And I just say this because I've watched so many people have the fuel and the desire to be an entrepreneur, but they just never kind of quite fall in love with it. And it's a love, it's a passion, but it's also something where I feel like, I mean, like I said, it's in my DNA. I can't be an employee for somebody else. And I can't stand inefficiency either. And I can't stop. And it's something that I always have to be my, you know, the thing most, I think people don't know about my clinic is that we're very tech heavy and my, we're in co-working spaces. My Portland clinic's the first medical clinic in a co-working space, and I'm surrounded by tech people. I actually take a lot from the tech industry. Medicine moves too slow for me, in my opinion. And so I'm always trying to iterate and reinvent. And my question always, and my team knows this, is yes, this is working, but how do we do it better? How do we serve our patients better? I really do feel like you're born this way. And I watch my son and I'm like, yeah, you know, your papa, not so much an entrepreneur. He's fantastic. Love my husband. But I'm like, you've got the genes for it. Cause he comes to me and he's like, hey mama, how would I do X, Y, and Z? And then I can earn this toy. And I'm like, whoa, you're not even 5. And you're already like figuring out like what, you know, what's the way like to be creative and to work towards what you want.
Yeah. It's so brilliant. I feel like I could talk to you for hours and I know people are going to want to follow up with your work. Dr. Brighton, where can people find you and learn more about what you're up to? And we'll have all of this information in our show notes.
Yeah. So you can find me at drbrighton.com. That's drbrighten. So it's Brighton like the sun. So you can find me there. I'm also very active on Facebook and Instagram. And so I would love for people to come leave me a comment, give me a shout out. Tell me what worked for you in this interview and what you'd love to hear more of, because that's how I know what to speak about and what to write about is when people come to me and say, hey, I loved this. I need to know more about this. I'm like, fantastic. I didn't know that. Thank you for that. And let's go deeper.
That's amazing. Of course, it's Brighton like the sun. I'm so not surprised by that. It was such a pleasure having you. Thanks so much for being here.
Yeah. Thank you so much. It was so great chatting with you today.
If you enjoyed our conversation and would like to hear more, head on over to Stitcher or iTunes and subscribe to the Anthropology Podcast. We would also really appreciate a quick review. When people have their health, they can change the world. Let us keep you healthy and you go change the world.